Morning. That was one of my favorite songs, an oldie but goodie, and funny, it's just as valid today as the day it was written. That's War on the People by Clan Dykin. You gotta like a bunch of folks who travel around with a solar-powered sound system, you know? Like, those are the kind of people that I can really get behind. And so anyway, that should give you maybe a little bit of an idea what we're going to talk about this morning here on Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm your host, Melody Silverwolf, and Audie Haynes is off enjoying the delights of vacation today. She'll be back next week. And this morning, we're going to have a plethora of guests. Right now, I have two guests here with me in the studio, Chris Iverson and Madeline Martinez, and they are the co-chief petitioners from Citizens for a Safer Portland, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the fact that tomorrow, the 7th annual Million Marijuana March is going to be happening starting at high noon in Pioneer Courthouse Square. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to be joined by Multnomah County Sheriff candidates Don DuPay and Bernie Giusto. And we're going to be hearing from Phil Liebenbaum, who's a local attorney, and he's going to give us an update on a landmark case that was decided yesterday by the Oregon Supreme Court, Washburn versus Columbia Forest Products. So it's a fun and information-packed show, folks. Don't go away. We're going to be here till 9. And everything that you always wanted to know and needed to know about medical marijuana and maybe not so medical marijuana as well is going to be yours between now and 9 o'clock. So without further ado, let's get to Madeline. Would you like to introduce yourself first?
Yes, my name is Madeline Martinez, and I'm the executive director of Oregon Normal, as well as the co-chief petitioner of Citizens for Safer Portland, to change the priority for law enforcement to make it the lowest priority for marijuana offenses, or we consider it not offensive. We would like to see the money spent elsewhere. you know, using it wisely to probably help with human services rather than spending $60 million statewide on marijuana arrests, which absolutely makes no sense when we're $57 million short on Portland schools.
Yeah, I'll say. Well, so Chris Iverson, who you're also the co-chief petitioner, right? You were one of the people who conceived of this initiative. So tell us a little bit about why you decided we needed this initiative.
Well, I think that we have a really great medical marijuana program thanks to the efforts of Oregon Normal and all those hardworking activists that got this great bill through the last legislative session, which makes the Oregon program the best one in the entire country.
Definitely.
I think medical marijuana is here to stay. There's 14,000 patients, 2,000 doctors, over 5,000 caregivers, so there's a lot of people involved in the program. All the work we did in the 90s, you were there, Melody, Madeline as well, seems to have paid off. And we need to take the next step for all those other people out there that may not qualify for a medical card, but certainly do use cannabis for medical-related reasons, for relaxation, for spirituality, for personal use, and for whatever they want.
Well, and you know, as Dennis Perrone famously has said, and I totally agree with him, all use is medicinal. And I think that if you really think about that, that's true. You know, we all seek to calm ourselves down. You know, when you go home at night and maybe you have a glass of wine, or maybe you turn on the TV and zone out in front of it, or maybe you surf the internet, maybe you listen to some soothing music. You're seeking to, you know, relax, to change consciousness, and that's really what medical marijuana and recreational marijuana users are doing. And you know, there's no way you can draw a line between the two. I don't think it's a continuum. And it's just, I think it's a human need and a human right to be able to help one's mental and emotional and physical state improve.
Absolutely. And not just that, Melody, but we seem to be arresting large amounts of people more so than ever, according to the latest FBI figures. Here in Oregon, it may not seem like we have a war against cannabis, but we do. Madeline just pointed out we spend over $60 million to arrest people just for marijuana in the state of Oregon. That is ridiculous. That's high priority. Every dollar spent, every second spent is time away from arresting and prosecuting violent criminals, child molesters, rapists. So we really need to get our priorities straight. And our initiative, the Citizens for a Safer Portland initiative, would make adult marijuana offenses the lowest police priority. And for us, this is a logical next step, because we want to tell the police to stop arresting adults for marijuana, take all that money and spend it on something worthwhile like health care or drug treatment and education or possibly the schools.
Yes. Well, I know when I was in Amsterdam back in 95, you know, it was really obvious that their policy of harm reduction really works, because one of the reasons, in fact, since that time, they've made some innovations, some further innovations to their law. And one of the reasons that they started ignoring the criminal sanctions against cannabis is, you know, they just realized it really wasn't a priority. There were many other things that required the police's attention. And I must say, the police system in the Netherlands is far more effective than the police system in the United States in many ways. But since that time, they have even gone further to separate what they call soft drugs, which is marijuana and hashish and mushrooms and maybe, I don't think LSD is included there, maybe.
Most plant drugs.
Yes, versus the hard drugs, you know, cocaine, heroin, opium, that sort of thing. And the reason that they did that is because they didn't want people to have to expose themselves to the more criminal element to get the soft drugs. And so they sanctioned the soft drugs to some degree and set them off in their own little area where you can get them in a coffee shop or whatever. And that causes people who are only, you know, using minor amounts of these drugs, only wanting to consume them and not, you know, sell massive quantities across the world, to not be involved with that criminal element, to give them a lower risk, and then for them to be able to focus on the people who are really harming the community. And I think when you're looking at spending $60 million a year here in Oregon, you're not really going to get value for that. A lot of the fish that you scoop up in your net are going to be little fish, and you're not really getting the big fish.
That's exactly what's happening. And, you know, on a side note, in Amsterdam, they have one-third the rate of cannabis use among young people as we do here in America, but you can buy it in 500 coffee shops. So it really shows something about their evolved thinking.
So, Madeline,
and, you know, I'd really like it to invite everyone to come out to the Million Marijuana March tomorrow. We start to have the square under our control about 10 a.m., so we'd like you to get out there, come out and sign the petition. It'll be circulated throughout the march and after the march at the rally that we'll be holding there. The march starts at high noon, so we need you to get there on time. Try to come about 11:30. We have this beautiful cannabis dragon named Ma.
It's amazing.
Which is the first ever Chinese Mandarin character for hemp. So come out and look at Ma and dance with her. She'll be dancing down the street of down the streets of Portland with a full police escort. And don't forget, no dogs, no drugs, no alcohol. Come out and show our numbers. Because if we would just show our representatives in our city, and it'll be on the news, the amount of people that consume marijuana safely, that we will make a big impact on this. And you need to come and sign this initiative. It is so important to all of us.
Yes, it is. And I just wanted to point out that for those of you who are like, Walt, I have a job. It's a, you know, if they found out, I'd be fired. We have prepared bags for you to wear over your head. They're grocery bags with eye holes cut out and pictures of various historical and present-day figures who smoke marijuana. So you don't have to. You can march anonymously, and you know, it's a fun way to enjoy a beautiful day and to connect with your community. And Madeline's right. We do need everyone to sign this petition because Chris, tell us how many signatures you need again.
We need 26,998 valid signatures, which means we are going for well over 40,000 signatures
just to be
make
on the
sure.
safe side. Yes, and you know, this petition is very important because. If we can achieve this, then I think that it will bring, you know, a new kind of harmony to our community, in a sense that people won't have to constantly be looking over their shoulders worrying about the police. So I know there's been other communities that have passed ordinances like this, and it's had a positive effect there. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Well, both Seattle and Denver have passed recent ordinances making marijuana offenses, in particular possession, a lower priority or the lowest priority. And both those cities have had great success with their measures. Our initiative is a hybrid of the low priority concept, which means that we're taking it about as far as we can go. We are making everything to do with marijuana a low priority. That means growing, selling and possessing, and, you know, any other offenses that you can be arrested or cited for. Now, we believe that this is necessary because, quite frankly, we decriminalized possession of up to an ounce here in Oregon in 1973. So over 30 years, we've had a policy of decriminalization for personal possession here in Oregon, but that has not stopped the police from arresting people, citing them. Here in Multnomah County, every 9 hours, someone gets arrested or cited for marijuana. And as Madeline pointed out, $60 million in the state per year. I mean, this is not low priority. So most of the police out there, the ones I've talked to and the ones that have been on the news and so on and so forth, they're not concerned with marijuana. As a matter of fact, most of the ones I've talked to would much rather arrest violent criminals and not go after marijuana users, but their hands are tied because of the laws.
Or people running meth labs or something like that.
Right, and you know, I want to say, as a mother and a grandmother, I'm really saddened to see how many college students lose their student loan, their ability to get a student loan, because they've been caught with marijuana, and not necessarily smoking in the street or anything, but in their possession. They get a ticket for less than an ounce, they go to court, they lose their driver's license for 6 months. If they appeal it, well, they get it back, but in that time, they can lose their jobs, they can lose their, mess up their class schedule. So many things can go wrong, and I'm really concerned that we're creating this whole generation of criminals unnecessarily. And, you know, I said the other day on the news that the definition of insanity is to continue to perform the same act and expect a different outcome. Mm-hmm. And this war on marijuana is just that. It's insane.
Well, yes, it is. It's obviously not working, just like prohibition didn't work. But I have a sort of devil's advocate question. Yesterday on the news, we learned about a young man who he's 13 years old, and he took some marijuana to school and gave it to a classmate. And then the police subsequently discovered that he brought it from home, and that he says, oh, well, there's more there. And they went to his home, and they found that his parents had 8 pounds of marijuana. So under the initiative, what would happen to people like that? Would you say that that was a situation where the police would get involved or not?
Well, the initiative is for adults, and if you're a minor, then it's still, unfortunately, high priority.
Well, now, what about the parents allowing him to take it, you know what I mean?
That's hard to say. I would probably guess that the police could go after the minor, but could not go after the adults.
And the other thing that comes into play here is that the initiative also, there are some exceptions to law enforcement coming out, which is 1,000 feet of a school. We wanted to keep that there because we believe that children shouldn't be involved with marijuana.
Of course not. Of course not.
And we wanted to create that safe buffer zone within 1,000 feet of school.
And it's 100 feet of a business.
100 feet of any business where the business owner or person who has authorization calls the police. This will curtail, hopefully, any kind of marijuana dealing happening, especially down in the transit mall. And there are other exceptions, such as driving under the influence, anything in public. So this isn't a public law. This is for a private residential situation. And everything
so
to do with minors.
You couldn't just sit on the bus mall smoking a big fat joint.
Absolutely not. This is for an adult in their own house to smoke in the privacy of their own house, to grow a few plants and not be hassled by the police.
And, of course, the police still could arrest you if they felt it was really egregious, like you were selling it to, you know, to school children or something. And then in that case, isn't there, there's a committee that would review that arrest, isn't there?
Well, the Citizens Oversight Committee that will be set up to oversee the implementation of the new law and make sure the police are following the new law would go ahead and take all that information down in one of its quarterly meetings. That information would be publicly available, and the police officer would be requested to come and justify their arrest, essentially. And all of that will go in a nice report, which will be released to the public. Now, you know, if it has to do with a minor or one of these other exceptions, then it's pretty cut and dry.
Yes,
they can arrest this person, cite them, what have you. It's just for adults that this is low priority.
Right.
So if it has an adult involved, then it's going to be low priority.
You can smoke in your own house as long as you're not outside, and that would be my understanding of the law.
He didn't hear the question. Our engineer asked a question through the headphones that Chris couldn't hear. He looked confused. Yes, you can. Under the provisions of this initiative, you could indeed smoke in your house or in your backyard or whatever when you were having a barbecue or something. And I think I just really wanted to emphasize for listeners that so they'll be sure to understand that this is in no way going to promote teenagers having marijuana or children or people being able to, you know, sell it on the street corner or anything of the kind, because I think that people do have those fears.
You know, and I think that a lot of police officers, law enforcement, are really kind of supportive of this in the sense of they're not going to have to worry about going after these minor, you know, what some people call crimes, people just using privately. It makes no sense when there's so much other stuff going on out there. There's a lot of violent crime. There's a lot of, you know, rapes, murders, children being molested. Those are the things that law enforcement should be trying to go after rather than, you know, people that are consuming. Because the only real victims in all this are taxpayers. Taxpayers that are paying a lot of money for law enforcement to go after these minor offenses, let's say.
Exactly. And this is not decriminalization. This is not legalization. Once this initiative passes, it will not be sold in 7-Elevens. Basically, this is a step towards tax and regulate.
Right.
And what we want to do is see marijuana put into like a liquor store and sold to adults with ID, like alcohol. We all know alcohol is almost impossible to get if you're under 21. That's because it's regulated and controlled, and they tax it. So if we can put marijuana into a centrally controlled store like a liquor store, we think we can raise over $500 million. That's $500 million from the taxes of marijuana alone for our state. And that could fund a huge health care program.
Yes, it could. I mean, nationally, it's in the billions of dollars, the worth of the marijuana crop.
I'd like to go back to last year's legislative session. House Bill 5077 took $900,000 out of our surplus in the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program that was taken from us, and it was used to fill the gaps in human services. Now, I don't know what everyone else calls it, but I call it a tax on medical marijuana patients. And I'm really concerned that, initially I was really concerned that it was horrible, but then I realized that it wasn't.
No.
You know, it actually legitimized our program.
That's right.
And it showed that this is a successful financial revenue that we could use in our whole state. Now, I don't know why some of the people haven't picked up on it, our representatives, but what you need to do is call. You need to call your representatives and let them know that you want them to do something about this.
Yes, indeed. Well, hey, folks, this is a call-in show, and we've already got a bunch of callers stacked up like cordwood. The phone number, 503-231-8187. So let's go to our first caller now. You're on the air, caller.
Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning. I was just wondering about the 1,000-foot rule. It sounds like a huge loophole because my property is within 1,000 feet of a school.
I kind of wondered about that,
or
too.
Or a business. Yeah,
1,000 feet is a pretty long way.
Yes, it is.
It's kind of a standard phrase, though, isn't it, Chris?
Because like a Portland city block is only 225 mm-hmm. feet long or something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about being four blocks away from a school.
I know.
And that's kind of like an entrapment thing with the 1,000-foot rule.
Do you want to address that, Chris?
Yes, you know, we had several lawyers working on this issue, and it was decided that we should align ourselves with the already existing federal and state law, which says that if you're within 1,000 feet of a school committing a so-called drug offense, then you will have an enhanced sentence. Now, we don't call for any enhanced sentences, but if you are within 1,000 feet of a school and you're growing or selling or buying, then you would not be treated as low priority. Now, to put this in context, anything you can do right now, which is basically possess up to an ounce or smoke in the privacy of your own house or what have you, nothing will change as far as that goes. You know, you would still be subject to getting a traffic ticket for possession of up to an ounce in the privacy of your own house or outside if you're within 1,000 feet of a school, but all the other offenses, growing, selling, buying, would not be low priority if you're within 1,000 feet of a school. That's pretty cut and dry. Unfortunately, we had to put it in there. We need to win this initiative, and we felt like if we could have a huge growing set up next to a school, that would cause us a loss at the vote itself.
Yeah, I totally sympathize with you, caller. That was one of my concerns as well, but I think what Chris said is true, that, you know, it's kind of difficult. You want to be sure that people don't, that there's no huge stumbling block in there that will make people not vote for it.
Right. Yeah.
So I do feel for you, though. I had the same exact reaction.
Well, thank you very much.
It's not
Thanks
a perfect law. This is more a residential law for people in residential neighborhoods. This isn't really for people in mixed use neighborhoods or in business neighborhoods.
Well, okay. I think that, you know, as we move along, hopefully, the school thing will become less of an issue once people see that everyone's not going to be, you know, throwing branches of marijuana over the schoolyard fence or something.
Right.
Right. I think discretion is always the stronger point. Just make sure that you're very discreet, and you probably already are, so.
Well, thanks a lot for your call, though.
Thank you.
And we hope we see you tomorrow at high noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Please come out and support us.
And wear a bag if you want.
Sign this initiative.
Yes, indeed. And so before I take my next caller, tell us a little bit about who's going to be speaking at the rally.
Well, there'll be all the usual suspects, all the marijuana activists that are here locally. You know, Chris will be there and a lot of others, Paul Stanford. We will have a wonderful guy named Twig who's going to talk a little bit about his experience with his mom 30 years ago dying of cancer. And all she wanted was to be able to have some relief of her nausea. And he was able to provide it for her. And he's got a beautiful letter to his mom that he's going to read to everyone, and we will have just a bunch of people, so come out and find out. Malady Silverwolf will be there. She'll be speaking, and Don DuPay will be speaking, and you know, we're even going to invite Sheriff Gusto, and we'll hope that he'll come out and speak.
Sure.
And come out there. You know, one of the things I forgot to mention is that our hemp dragon, Ma, is completely constructed of medical cannabis stalks, and you will not believe the way she looks.
She's not, well, her head is, yes.
But the rest of her body is 55% hemp, 45% cotton, and it's fabric, and it's just wonderful.
You just have to see this, it's not to be missed. Well, let's go ahead and take our next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, just
can
a
you
minute.
Turn your radio down, please?
Yeah, okay. Yes, I have a question. I don't know whether it can be answered on this program. Can medical marijuana help with high blood pressure and unhealthy cholesterol.
It can help a little bit with high blood pressure, if only for the relaxation factor, but it also, it's a vasodilator, I believe, so it can help a little bit. I don't know about cholesterol, though. I don't think
unhealthy
it can help
cholesterol.
That.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I want to ask one more question. It's probably not answerable, but anyway, I was wondering if the goddesses or the witches or like-minded people could do rituals or ceremonies to help get, to cleanse or get rid of the age-old brainwash against hemp and against medical marijuana.
I hope so.
We certainly have been, and we're going to continue to do so.
And, you know, later on this year, we're scheduling a goddess gathering. We had one last year. We had 25 women join with us. We spent the night together. We did ritual. So be listening up to Melody's show, because she will be letting you know when this is and where it is. But it's a bunch of women getting together, a bunch of goddesses, just, you know, doing ritual to change things. We were able to be really successful at the legislature last year by doing so. And Senate Bill 1085 passed smoothly through the Senate and the House. And we actually changed marijuana law, now increasing the usable amount per patient to 24 ounces from 4 that you were allowed maximally before. So this is really exciting.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thanks a lot. And she's already gone, but I'm sure she's still listening. Actually, I stand corrected. One of my bystanders here just informed me that a man named Dr. Orvald, who is a doctor who works with the Hemp Cannabis Foundation, recommends hemp oil ingested, you know, a teaspoonful a day or whatever on your Wheaties for cholesterol. So
yeah,
it's a very helpful plant. It has many
uses. If you're consuming it, if you're smoking it, you should also try eating it. It's really a wonderful
roasted hemp seeds are delicious. They really are.
They're also the highest source of plant protein on the planet besides spirulina.
Very
really
high
protein,
in essential fatty acids. And
very
all
healthy.
That.
Mm-hmm. And just to follow up with what the goddess called in and said earlier. It was women who ended alcohol prohibition, and I believe it will likely be women that end marijuana prohibition.
It was women who instigated it, and then when it didn't work out the way they'd hoped, it was not the same women necessarily, but it was women who ended it, yes.
And, you know, if all you goddesses would come out and join us tomorrow for the Million Marijuana March, that would be wonderful. Bring your signs. Bring all of your regalia.
We can have a goddess contingent.
We will. We definitely will at the rally after the march. And during the march, we have a biodiesel bus that is going to actually transport people that can't make the whole march, because we have a lot of patients that want to participate, but aren't able to take the whole walk, and it's a huge walk. So if you talk the talk, come and take the walk with us tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. The bus named Cool will be transporting those of us who can't or just don't want to walk all that way, and we can hang out the windows and whoop and holler. So I want to let you all know that in about 30 seconds, it's going to be 8 o'clock straight up here in the beautiful city of Portland, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, Albany, 91.9 FM in White Salmon. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm your host, Melody Silverwolf, and my guests here in the studio are Chris Iverson and Madeline Martinez. They're the co-chief petitioners of Citizens for a Safer Portland initiative, which would make marijuana offenses for adults the lowest priority of the Portland police. And we're going to be joined in a little while by Don DuPay and Bernie Giusto, who are running for Multnomah County Sheriff, and a little bit later on the phone by Phil Liebenbaum, who is a Portland attorney, going to be talking about a landmark case that affects those of us who are medical marijuana patients. Number here, 503-231-8187. And let's go to another caller. Caller, you are on the air. Caller? Oh, no more callers. Oh, they went away. All right. Hey, you know, these things happen. So, Madeline, you wanted to talk a little bit more about the march.
Well, I wanted to mention to everybody, after you're done listening to this great show, you can listen to KPOJ and listen to our radio ad on there that talks about the march. And I think it's really thrilling that Air America has allowed us to run an ad. It's not everybody who lets us do that, and that's 620 on the AM dial.
Well, you know, the thing is that a lot of people, like MoveOn.org, for example, has tried to get an advertising regarding the war in Iraq on a number of media outlets, and it's very inoffensive, you know, fact-based, and they're like, oh, no, we can't put that on, and oh. And I think it's kind of ironic because that station's owned by Clear Channel, you know, but money talks.
Yeah.
And we know what walks.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, I also want to encourage everybody out there. I know this is kind of, we're missing our, I mean, not off point, but Kulongowski, Ted Kulongowski, who is our governor currently, is also running once again to be reelected. And I think it's important for us, our community,
yes,
the cannabis community, whether you're a medical marijuana patient or whether you're a social user, to call him and ask him how he feels about it. Because even though he was supportive
right.
of it when he was elected, he hasn't been
much.
Very supportive or helped us very much. We seem to be the stepchildren of society. So give him a call at 503-546-0416, and that's Kulongowski, 503-546-0416. And then you can also call Kevin Mannix and ask him how he feels.
Kevin Mannix is running for the Republican.
He's running for the Republican.
Died.
Of course, Kulongowski is the Democrat, for those of you who don't know. Kevin Mannix is the Republican, and he can be reached at 503-557-1855. And that's Kevin Mannix at 503-557-1855. And ask him what he intends to do for medical marijuana patients and for marijuana in general, and see what you get as an answer. And you know what I did that was very effective? I said, I'm sitting here filling out my ballot.
Yes.
And I'd like to know how you feel before I vote for you.
Yes.
This is really important. And call every single one of them, Diane. And Lynn, they're all running for office, and this is the time that they need our support. So guess what? Can we call our marker in and say, we need your support?
Well, absolutely. I think it's time that we take ourselves seriously as citizens and as a movement and say, you know, we're no longer just going to assume that you're not going to help us out. You know, we pay taxes, we're productive members of society, and we expect you to address our issue. Hold their feet to the fire a little bit. And I think that's an excellent idea that Madeline's doing, and I encourage everyone to do so. And if everybody did do it, wow, they would be making all kinds of pronouncements about marijuana all over the place.
And when you look at your ballot, also look at the city commissioners and give them a call and say, hey, you know what? We have the Citizens for Safer Portland. Do you support it? And ask them, because we need to do this. These people represent us. And you know what? You get the government that you deserve.
Yes,
and
so
if you're not involved, if you're just sitting there complaining, and it's not going to do anything for us. So you need to get on the phone, send a letter, a fax, and I'll tell you what I tell everyone. Put the joint down or step away from your bong and get involved.
Yep. And, you know, we also get the radio station you deserve, and this is as much a your radio program as anyone's, and this is a call-in show, and you make it what it is. So if you'd like to contribute, 503-231-8187. Let's go ahead and take a caller now. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to say a few things about the initiative process.
Yes.
Yeah. I've had some experience with it, from gathering signatures to observing the count to observing the validation of signatures. And legally, you're only allowed, if you are a registered voter, you're allowed to sign it once. And when people sign it twice, or they're not a registered voter, when that signature is found, should it be found, there is a penalty for that. And an unregistered voter, if I recall, the penalty was 5 signatures. Statistically, they find that an unregistered voter, if they find one, there are 5 that they don't find.
Well, I know they have some sort of a random sampling algorithm that they follow to test petitions.
Yes, and the point is that people don't understand that that's how it happens, and they get a little overexcited about their stand, and they sign it multiple times. We actually had someone working on our petition who signed it 14 times and cost us probably quite a few signatures.
Yes, I think that's a concern. That's so, why the campaign has people, you know, making sure that everything is as valid as possible.
Oh, well, but I don't hear that on the radio, and I've heard this about petitions before, initiative processes, where KBOO has supported an initiative process, and I never hear that information, that don't sign it more than once it can cause problems.
You know, I have a hard time remembering sometimes which petitions I've signed when there's a lot of them circulating. People stick petitions in front of me all the time, and I'm like, okay, I'll sign that. And then someone has it, and I'm like, did I sign this or not? I mean, I think it's a normal human error thing, so that's why it's important for the petitioners to
be
diligent about combing
through
to make sure there's no duplicates and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm a little more informed about what I sign.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's hard to keep. Sometimes there's been cases in the past when there was like 20 or 30 initiatives on the ballot in an election year, and it's very difficult to remember which ones you've signed and which ones you haven't.
But it is important. Thank
yes,
you for
it
that
is.
Point.
I think you've made some really good points.
Yeah, and just maybe to address this gentleman's very good, intelligent mm-hmm. points is that we do have an advantage with our initiative in that most people do remember whether or not they've signed it. It is an initiative that sticks out amongst the other ones. It's a marijuana initiative. It's the only one being circulated. There was a group called First Things First, which had a City of Portland initiative like ours circulating. They spent $350,000. It was money from PGE, Quest, all the big businesses that run and own Portland. They did not qualify for the ballot because they had too many duplicates and not enough people were registered to vote that signed it. So we've seen this. We have one-fourth the amount of money as they do. And, you know, of course, we're stereotyped as being a bunch of irresponsible stoners. So we have overcompensated in our validity checks. And what we're doing is we are checking 20 to 30% of every single signature that comes in our office. And if anybody slips below 70%, we are retraining them, sending them to different territory, or letting them go. And we also have someone who is entering in every single name into an Excel database, so we are checking for duplicates and we're scrubbing off all the duplicates. So mm-hmm. when we turn in our signatures, we expect to have a fairly high validity rate
yes.
and very little duplicates, and this is how we think we'll make the ballot.
Yes.
Yeah, we did that as well through the computers. We checked for registered voters and duplicates.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we collected 30-some thousand, and we needed approximately the same number of signatures that you do, and we didn't get on the ballot.
Yeah, we're going to go for 40 just to make sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for your call. I think you made some really great points, and definitely, I think, you know, taking
care
of business
is important.
Heads up,
watch out, don't cheat.
Pardon?
Heads up, watch out, don't cheat.
Well, we won't.
All
thanks
right,
a
bye.
Lot.
Yeah, so it's definitely not cool to sign our initiative more than once.
No.
Whether or not people think they're helping us, they're not helping us.
Yeah, I know people get enthusiastic, and, you know, I totally understand the impulse, but that's just not the way that it works in a petition land. Okay.
Yeah, if you're feeling enthusiastic, bring your friends to sign
yes.
it.
Yes, indeed. And also, you know, if you're feeling enthusiastic, you know, the campaign will need plenty of volunteers as the election comes closer. And, of course, Oregon Normal always is looking for people to become involved as well. So let's go ahead and talk to our next caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Good morning.
I want to start my comments by saying, first of all, I really support your initiative and hope you all the luck in the world.
Thank you.
I don't think you'll need it. I'm a little concerned about the a related issue, drug testing in particular.
Yeah, that's a big issue.
It's particularly a problem with marijuana because when they test you for marijuana, it doesn't really say whether or not you're intoxicated on marijuana.
No,
it lets you know whether or not you've been using it in the past.
Well, that's one of the things that the entire Washburn versus Columbia Forest Products case depended upon. And
right.
Like I said, we're going to have the attorney on a little bit later to talk about it. But, yeah, Mr. Washburn he slipped on some ice at work and so was drug tested, which was silly in itself. And he's a medical marijuana patient, so, of course, he had, you know, some
uh-huh.
degree in his system, but he wasn't intoxicated.
And
then his employer terminated him. And then, of course, he sued. And
he lost in the court, didn't he?
And it's all, you know, in fact, it's perfect that you brought that up because I've just learned from my engineer that he's actually on the line. And he can talk a little bit about that. Did you want to say something real quick before we get him on?
Well, no, just as I hope someday that there's a test where we can actually tell so that we don't have to, like, kind of...
Well, I hope someday that we join the rest of the developed nations
uh-huh.
of the world in not doing pre-employment and employment-related drug testing that isn't for really crucial...
No, I'm also concerned about...
things.
Although generally... my understanding is people who are stoned actually usually drive safer than others.
Actually, there's been a study that showed that. And I think some of us could speak to that anecdotally. Some people, though, are hopeless behind the wheel when they consume any kind of substance, and they shouldn't be on the road.
I think it depends a lot on how stoned they are and all that kind of thing. So,
well, let's go ahead and let's hear from Phil Liebenbaum now. Thanks a lot for calling. So, Phil, welcome to KBOO. Good morning. I can't quite hear you.
Good morning.
There you are.
All right.
So let me give you a quick intro to you here. This is Phil Liebenbaum, and you're an attorney. You were the lead attorney for this case I was just mentioning, Washburn versus Columbia Forest Products. So tell us a little bit about what has become of the case.
Well, it was just decided yesterday by the Oregon Court or Supreme Court that overruled the Court of Appeals on the disability issue. They didn't reach the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, so that part of the Court of Appeals opinion is still intact.
And so what does that mean exactly? So they found that Mr. Washburn wasn't a disabled person, right?
Right. What they did, they looked at the text of the Oregonians with Disability Act and said if a person who is otherwise disabled can mitigate their disability by using medication, then the person isn't entitled to the protections of the Act.
No, I think that's just ridiculous. That's like saying, well, if I'm a... if I have MS and I can't walk very well, but my medication mitigates it, when you take medication for MS, sometimes you have good days and sometimes you have bad days. And yes, it does mitigate it in the sense that it helps it, but you might still have the bad days.
Absolutely. And it seems to me the only fair thing to be is if there is a substance or a device that helps mitigate the symptoms, that the employer should at least have to accommodate that device or that medication.
Yes.
But this is really, the court looked at it as a threshold issue and just said that you don't get the protections of the Oregonians with Disability Act unless you're a, quote, disabled person.
So that means that Mr. Washburn's employer was justified in terminating him just because he was a medical marijuana patient?
Well, I'm certainly not going to say that.
Yeah.
What happened is he didn't get the protections of the Oregonians with Disability Act. We said that because he's a disabled person, Mr. Washburn should be entitled to the protections of the Act, and the employer needs to make a reasonable accommodation for his disability. What we asked for was a blood test rather than a urine test.
Yes.
As your previous caller just said, a urine test only shows what are known as metabolites of marijuana that are non-impairing, and they can show up for up to 3 weeks after the use of the marijuana. So they don't help an employer show whether or not he's impaired. In fact, they give a test for impairment that cannot show impairment. It ranges on the theater of the absurd.
Yes.
But
now a blood test would show that.
A blood test would show that there's active THC in the system, and it usually dissipates within 3 to 5 hours.
So that would mean that you might be and likely be impaired.
The medical record in our case, the employer hired a toxicologist from up at OHSU and says there is no standard for impairment. In other words, I think most people know that if you have a 0.08 blood alcohol level in your system, you're deemed impaired.
But there's nothing like that for marijuana.
Right. Our thoughts was if there's any impairing causing compounds, we are not protected by the Act. Mr. Washburn did not want to go in there under the influence of marijuana. He doesn't want to work next to people who are under the influence of marijuana. That's not the
point. And
he
never did use marijuana before coming to work.
That's right. He was always clean.
Mm-hmm.
Except for this metabolite that's in his urine.
Right, because he used it in the evenings.
Right, to help him sleep.
Yes.
He had really bad leg spasms. And some of the medical records in the case show that he went in, and before he became registered in the program, he got some marijuana and he smoked it. He went in the next day to his doctor and says, "Doc, I just had the best night of sleep I've had in 20 years, in spite of using medications to try and sleep." So it really was a substance that really helped him sleep. It had the least side effects, and yet now he can't work because of it.
Well, do you think that, I know I personally, as a medical marijuana patient, I know I'm not alone, have been very concerned about the outcome of this case because, as people may or may not know, during the last legislative session, Associated Oregon Industries, which is someone I want to do a show on very soon, a large pro-industry and pro-business group, was pushing very hard for a law that would basically say that if you were found to be a medical marijuana patient, or if you were found to have metabolites in your urine at any point during your employment, they'd be justified in terminating you. And so that's, you know, my fear is that that medical marijuana patients, especially in anyone else who smokes marijuana, will eventually end up unemployable. And so what do you think that am I being too much of a too draconian here and worrying about this or not?
Yeah, I think that's probably a little outside the mainstream thinking, but that's what we like about you, Melody.
But I mean, do you think this is sort of the beginning of the slippery slope for medical marijuana patients or not?
My personal opinion is no. I think most of the people out there know that medical marijuana is not as dangerous as some folks want us to believe.
Of course not.
What I have found in my dealings with businesses is they're more concerned about their business. They're more concerned about their federal contracts than really going after people with medical marijuana.
And that's a valid concern. They're in business to make money. The feds do require that you have the so-called drug-free workplace. What a joke. But, I mean, I can understand if I was an employer, I would feel very conflicted also.
Right. But, you know, if they would just give the test that shows impairment, it would resolve a lot of problems.
Yes. Which, of course, is more expensive than a urine test, right?
Well, yeah, you have to have somebody draw blood, yes.
Right.
But my guess is the testing can be improved. It's my understanding now they're going to hair testing.
Oh, that's more draconian than ever, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know much about it, but I hear it can go back 3 months as a marker rather than just 3 weeks.
Well, I know a gentleman who recently was subjected to a hair test, and, yes, he isn't even really a very heavy consumer of medical marijuana, and he did not pass.
Yeah, and I've seen cases where people are qualified for their jobs, and at the last minute they're offered the job and said, well, here, you're going to have to go see our doctor for a physical, and we're going to take some hair or urine.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just mortified because they may have used marijuana in the last 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have anything to do with their qualifications
for
the job.
Of course not. And, you know, well, obviously we have a lot of work to do in this country to change the laws on a national level. But, you know, working locally is a lot more effective. So so do you have any, like, final thoughts on, you know, like what you, obviously you're not going to appeal this case further?
Well, we can't because it was an Oregon law that was being interpreted by the highest court in Oregon. So it's pretty much a final decision. However, it is a legislative enactment that can be changed.
Yes.
You know, that's one of the things, Phil, this is Madeline Martinez, that hoping to work for in our next legislative session.
Yes.
We're trying to put some protections in there from AOI and their ability to attack disabled people across the state of Oregon. It makes no sense when hardworking disabled Oregonians are out there, you know, working, and they want to fire them and make more homeless people. I mean, we're running out of bridges for people to live under now.
Pretty
and
much.
It's really, really sad. And I want to know how we can do this as either at the legislative level or as disabled Oregonians just do a class action suit against us. This is outrageous.
Well, what I think is amazing is here I have a person who has a disability and all he wants to do is work.
Yes.
I mean, what an ethic a person has. He's disabled, he's hurting.
And he's a very nice gentleman.
He is. And, you know, the employer liked him. We got along with the employer well, but the employer just felt bound by this. You know, regulation in their handbook.
Well, I mean, they wrote the handbook. I think that's kind of disingenuous, but, you know.
Well, but they've got their lawyers who are concerned about their federal contracts.
Yes.
So it's not quite as black and white, but if you look at the solution, give them a blood test. It's easy.
Yes. Right. Well, now let me ask you this before I let you go. If you're a medical marijuana patient listening to this, and now that this case has been decided, if you go to work and either they come up to you and say, hey, Bob, or hey, Mary, we're going to drug test you just as a random, or maybe you slip on the ice or, you know, fall down a flight of stairs or something and, you know, drop something heavy. And so they say, oh, well, now you have to take a drug test. What should that person do? Should they disclose to the employer before the test that they are a medical marijuana patient, or how should they handle that?
They need to disclose it before they get terminated.
What about before the test or after
probably,
the test comes back?
Probably. They say, look, this is going to show up because I'm a medical marijuana user.
Right.
Right now, though, the Oregonians with Disability Act still may protect them. In other words, if their disability isn't mitigated by the medical marijuana,
uh-huh.
maybe they have another disability, they still may be protected.
Right.
It's unlikely. But what we found out in the Washburn case was if Mr. Washburn had had a prescription for, is it Marinol?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then that would have been a, quote, legal THC
reason
metabolite
to have the THC,
in his system.
Yeah.
And they would have accepted that.
Well, and of course, many people realize, in case they don't, Marinol is extremely expensive and out of the range of possibility of being affordable for people who don't have prescription coverage. They're like $15 a pill or something ridiculous like that.
Now, I didn't say he had to fill the prescription.
Yes, he just had to have it. Yes.
Right. And, you know, that should be a hint for everybody out there. If you're mm-hmm. thinking about it, maybe you can ask your doctor to prescribe Marinol
right.
for you.
And then one final question, a little bit of a refinement of my earlier question. I've heard people handle it differently, but I have heard that it is best to several people have disclosed their patient status only when they went to the doctor or laboratory to be tested, and then the laboratory never disclosed their status to their employer. They simply told them that they passed because they went to the lab and said, oh, by the way, doc or nurse, whoever, I'm a medical marijuana patient. Show them their card at that time. So do you recommend telling the employer or telling the place where you're being tested?
Well, it's important that the employer knows, because under the Oregon with Disability Act, that's the person who you would be bringing an action against. So you have to show they had knowledge that you were a medical marijuana user and thus had a disability before they terminate you. Once they terminate you, it doesn't do much good to say, oh, by the way, I'm a medical marijuana right. user because I have a disability, because the act only protects employees and job applicants. So you have to tell your employer before you go to that test or before you get terminated that you have a disability. It's more important that you tell them you have a disability and you medicate with marijuana
right.
than it is just saying, I use marijuana.
Right. Of course, a medical card gives you a legitimate reason to be using the marijuana in their eyes.
Right. And you have yes. to tell them you have a disability, because that's what the act protects against.
Okay. Okay. Well, did you have anything further you want to tell our listeners?
Nope. Just keep working at the legislature. We can overturn almost any court case with the legislative enactment.
All right.
We'll be sending you that language real quick,
yes,
like
indeed.
Phil, so
okay.
you can give us your heads up
Some
on it.
Great advice. Thank you very much, Phil Liebenbaum, for all the work that you do for our movement and for being on our show.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let me remind you all that our phone number here is 503-231-8187, and we will be joined momentarily, hopefully, by Sheriff Bernie Giusto and Don DuPay, who is another candidate for that office. But in the meantime, I'm here with Chris Iverson and Madeline Martinez, who are the co-chief petitioners for Citizens for a Safer Portland. And as I said, our number, 503-231-8187.
Melody, may I remind everyone
yes,
that tomorrow, May the 6th, at 11 a.m., we're going to be gathering at Pioneer Courthouse Square, at, right behind the Starbucks there. We're going to be gathering at the small amphitheater, and we'd like you to come out and join us. If you're not a consumer, but you believe in personal privacy, please come out and support us.
Yes.
It's the Million Marijuana March. It's the seventh year in a row that we've been consistent out there every year supporting this issue and bringing light to this issue, and we'd really like to bring light to the hemp issue. We'd like to get Oregon farmers growing hemp rather than us supporting other countries' economies by importing hemp to our country. So come out and let's get some support for the Million Marijuana March, and you can come and march with the hemp dragon Ma.
She's amazing. It's
she
worth
is.
A trip downtown just to see Ma. You just haven't seen anything like this ever. It's mind-boggling.
Yes, come out, and we'll be handing out free bottles of water. This is a free event. No dogs, no drugs, no alcohol. We have a full police escort, and it's important that you come out and support us. If you'd like more information about it, you can go online at www.ornorml.org or call us at 503-239-6110. And don't forget to watch Cannabis Common Sense tonight on Public Access Channel 11. I'll be on there talking all about it again.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. And I wanted to let you all know that we are now joined on the telephone by Multnomah County Sheriff Bernie Giusto. Good morning, Mr. Giusto.
Morning.
Are you there?
I am.
Welcome to KBOO. And here in the studio, we have Don DuPay. Hi, Don.
Good morning, Don.
And Don is running against Sheriff Giusto, is the incumbent sheriff, and Don is his opponent. He's running for Multnomah County Sheriff as well. And so I want to welcome you to the show. And let's start off with Don. Don, what motivated you to run for Multnomah County Sheriff?
Well, I've been doing a Cannabis Common Sense television show now for nearly 4 years, and I have quite a following on that show in the medical community and the what I call the marijuana underground. And they suggested that I run for sheriff because they said that Bernie Jusso shouldn't run unopposed. So I thought about it for a while, and I thought, well, I used to be a policeman right here in Portland. I was a detective here for 10 years. I'm going to run against him.
Well, and so do you feel that what precisely do you feel what would you do differently as Multnomah County Sheriff? What do you differences of opinion do you have with Sheriff Jusso in terms of your policies, or how would your term be different?
Several. One of the things that I first started out to do, and I have sent out about 1,000 questionnaires asking people what they want the sheriff's office to do. The results from the questionnaires have been quite amazing, and they want the sheriff's officers to have a relaxed appearance. This we, they, every cop looks like G.I. Joe, they want that to change.
Mm-hmm.
I would put sheriff's officers in a more relaxed uniform, perhaps blazers and slacks. You can be authoritative without being intimidating, and there's no community policing in an intimidating police officer.
Okay. Well, Sheriff Jusso, would you like to respond to that?
Well, I think that, Don and I have had this conversation several times during the campaign, and really it's not the color of the uniform or the style of the uniform, it's the attitude of the officer in the uniform. You can be in slacks and blazers and with the wrong attitude.
That's very true.
With the wrong attitude, it really doesn't matter. I'll challenge anybody. I've worked at three different police agencies, Oregon State Police for 22 years, and Gresham Police Chief for 6 years, and now county sheriff for 3.5 years, which would make a total of 32 years in law enforcement. And that all three agencies I've worked for have served the public well. But in terms of kind of that extra attitude about public service, and has little to do with this sheriff, I'm not going to take any credit for it. I simply continue a tradition in the sheriff's office of problem-solving policing, that arresting people are an option we have, but we'd rather solve the problem up front. There is a tremendous amount of community policing that goes on in the sheriff's office in a non-urban but rural kind of setting, and we do that daily, even in urban Portland, as we are in charge of things like taking children from homes,
mm-hmm.
Taking homes from people, seizing people under sheriff's authority because they don't pay their taxes. We try to do it in a responsible, humane way. And I see the good hearts of the sheriff department every day, and I've been raised in the culture, Oregon State Police, very militaristic culture, but was still bound on impartial, fair enforcement of the law. That's what I believe in. I think that's what the sheriff's office believe in. And their appearance may put people off, but I got to tell you, since we've changed uniforms, the service attitude of the sheriff's office haven't changed, and I get way more good comments about my officer service and deputy service than I do otherwise, and the same with my civilian staff. So I think we have a different opinion, and I appreciate Don's opinion, and we'll, I think, continue to serve the public regardless of what uniform we wear.
Well, I wanted to ask you, what role does the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office play in marijuana enforcement here in this area? I mean, are they part of the, I know there's some sort of regional task force or interagency group that makes marijuana arrests. What role does the Sheriff's Office play, and what is your, how are the lines of authority drawn in that alliance?
Yeah, that's a good question. The Sheriff's Office actually participates, and I'll get back to the kind of marijuana enforcement generally, participates on two levels. We have a special investigation unit that is a drug enforcement unit that works mainly in East Multnomah County and in the west end of the county, but we do investigations in Portland as part of that unit. It's called Special Investigations. The other area we participate in is called the Regional Organized Crime Narcotics Team, and that's the team called Rockin'.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-level and high-level dealers. And marijuana is part of that enforcement philosophy. But I have to tell you that over the years, even though marijuana is still something that is enforced on a semi-regular basis, that the concern about drugs has been cyclical. And in my 32 years in law enforcement. since 1974, and it has, in my mind, except for the very large producers, the very large sales of marijuana, has slipped way, way, way down the priority list in terms of the, what we enforce.
Well, clearly you have lots of more important issues like, you know, meth labs and things like that, that, you know, children being in danger, that sort of thing, that are important.
That's exactly right. And I followed the recent initiative relative to lower priority for marijuana enforcement, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure that I necessarily object to that. It's very difficult when we have a national drug policy, a drug czar who thinks marijuana is a priority in the country. I understand that thought process that Czar Walters has in terms of marijuana, but I also say that my experience in the last 10 years leads me to believe that we've got much larger issues than that.
Well, yes, and of course, I personally believe that that stance is, at least in part, a very political one. Now, so tell me, assuming that the SAFER initiative becomes law, how will that impact the way that the sheriff's office enforces, who works with marijuana? And so, because you said that you do some work in the city of Portland as well as just in the unincorporated areas, how would the SAFER initiative impact your current activities around marijuana?
Well, I don't know that it would have an immediate effect because, as I said, I know that there are two units that really are active in Multnomah County. That's the Drug and Vice Division of the Portland Police Bureau and the Special Investigation Unit. The Sheriff's Office, DVD, Drug and Vice, is a much larger unit than ours. But I'm not sure that we'd see any immediate on-the-ground difference in terms of what we did. I tell you where it will show up. And Don and I have had this discussion as well. It will show up in who comes into my jails. The sheriff, by law, is responsible for all the jails in Multnomah County and every county in the state, but I'm talking about Multnomah County here. And it would impact who comes in for, like, let's say, distribution of marijuana, sales.
Right.
Marijuana, manufacture of marijuana. We don't have it. I'm telling you, we have very few people in jail anymore for anything relative to those charges around marijuana.
Well, you have very limited jail space, don't you?
We do have very limited jail space. And it's been years, as you know. It's been 1973 since marijuana was decriminalized in the state for less than an ounce. My experience tells me that that in terms of law enforcement on the street, although it may get enforced regularly, that it has to be a pretty evident violation, that law enforcement officers don't bring it up, don't have it on top of their mind as they take a look at whatever other criminal charges there might be that they're investigating. But it will impact to some degree who's in jail, how long they stay in jail. For marijuana, I think the initiative talks about enforcement. It does not talk about incarceration. But
surely to incarcerate someone, you have to enforce the law first and arrest them.
that's true. I'm not sure it totally prevents marijuana enforcement.
No, it doesn't.
But priority, and I understand it has a lot to do with the private side of use of marijuana, private residences, and those kind of things. I think that in the last, if I recall correctly, the last legalization vote in the state around marijuana, I think in the last general election.
Measure 33 was in 2004. Yes.
Right. Did if I'm correct, Multnomah County actually voted in favor of that?
Yes, it did.
Oh, yes, 56%.
Yes. Yes, it passed here.
So. As I say, we have a different opinion that this county kind of stands out in lots of ways in the state for a lot of different reasons. It affects the way that we elect governors. It affects the initiative measures in the state. My job here is to follow the law, and if the initiative passes, we'll follow the law.
Well, and I have one last question here. I'm going to give Don and everybody else a chance to ask some questions, but another question I did have was, I know that since the Measure 1085, or rather Senate Bill 1085 passed in the legislature last year, and there have been a number of changes to the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program in terms of, legal number of plants allowed and such, that the Department of Human Services, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, has been offering a sort of a training course for law enforcement to bring them up to speed on, you know, the new law and the changes in the law. And I was wondering, have you and your department gone through that training?
I don't think we have gone to that training yet. Now, I'm not going to say we haven't. I'm sure that the special investigation unit has gone to the training, my unit. But as a general rule, I'd have a hard time getting my deputies there. There's no reason that we can't invite them in, the health department in to talk about it.
Well, I work closely. My name's Madeline Martinez, and I'm the executive director of Oregon Normal, and I work closely with the Department of Human Services, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. And they now offer training, and they'll go out to your department and train you as necessary. Unfortunately, we find that a lot of officers are not using the system as it was intended or it was recommended by the Attorney General, that they check before they go out to make sure that it's a registered garden with the program. And that's a big concern to us because, as you know, we're patients, and many of us, just the fact that an officer is pounding on your door can be frightening. I've experienced that, and I'm retired law enforcement, and it's upsetting to me when I find, as retired law enforcement, that I've had to go through drug training when I was employed, but I don't see these officers going through it. When I confront them and ask them, can you direct me to a place to medicate out of public view, officer, quite cordially, they look at me like they're confused, and, they don't know what to tell me, so they say, go to the middle of the park over there, which would be a violation of the law, of course, and that's a huge concern to me.
Right. That's an interesting point, and I think that it's one of those, I guess it's a resource question, and it's also a priority question. It's difficult to, in this profession, if you've been in law enforcement, which you say you have, and I appreciate the fact that you have that point of view, it is concerning to have law enforcement pounding on your door, regardless if it even could bring you a sweepstakes ticket, let alone check a marijuana garden that's legally registered.
Right.
And education is a big piece of what we do. Sometimes we get to it kind of slowly, and I'm not sure that's a good excuse, but that's all only thing I'll reason.
Well, yeah, that's why we wanted to point out to you that this is offered, and all you have to do is call the Department of Human Services, the program, and they would be happy to come out and train officers. I have a lot of patients mm-hmm. that call me directly to say, well, the officers took my hash or my oil, my hemp oil, and they take stuff that they don't need to take, that they're not well informed that it is a preparation or a mixture of the marijuana, and they are entitled to have it.
Yeah, that's good advice, and I'll certainly take you
Well, I just want to remind our listeners, this is a call-in show, 503-231-8187. If you have a question for any of our guests, we have quite an assortment, so let me run them down again. On the phone, we have Multnomah County Sheriff Bernie Giusto. And here in the studio, we have Don Dupay, who's running against Mr. Giusto for Multnomah County Sheriff. And we also have Chris Iverson and Madeline Martinez, who are the co-chief petitioners for Citizens for a Safer Portland, which is an initiative petition which would make adult marijuana offenses the lowest priority for Portland police. And do we have any callers, engineers? Hello, engineers. Do we have any callers? Our engineers aren't paying attention. I guess we don't. but Chris wants to ask a question.
Sheriff Giusto, just wanted to thank you for your honesty. And, of course, I'd like to see Don Dupay as sheriff. But, I think you'd make a good second choice. And I just am really hoping that you instruct your officers to follow the law when it does pass and do it with integrity, because I think that we will appreciate that very much in, the next few years, and it will really say a lot about you and your integrity and your department. And also in Northern California, most of the sheriffs who have been elected down there, and as a matter of fact, most of the city council people are very pro-cannabis, and there are not any arrests being made down there whatsoever.
Well, I can assure you we'll follow the law. One of the things that I think you, when you take on these responsibilities as a chief elected officer of an organization, or even if you're appointed as a police chief, is that really it's not a matter of choice. I follow a lot of law, and that I may or may not disagree with. Last year we allowed the Western Prison Project into jail to register felons to vote. A lot of sheriffs thought I was over the line doing that, but the law allowed them to vote. I mm-hmm. believe my job is to give them access. To allow people to exercise their rights, whether in jail or not.
Well, that's glad to hear that. Well, we do have some callers. Let's go ahead and talk to a caller right now. Caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller. Oh, caller. I know you're there somewhere.
I'm here.
There you are. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
What was your question? Go ahead with your question.
Okay, I think Don has a lot of good ideas. I've listened to him on Friday nights, and I really like the way that what he wants to do with the extra money and stuff. But what I called about was to make a comment that I used to use happy pills and chill pills and sleeping pills, and I absolutely could not drive the car. But it was perfectly legal for me to. I was just supposed to do it with caution. And I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I can use marijuana and not have any of the side effects. And it gets rid of the pain, and I don't feel groggy, and I can drive perfectly fine. I wondered what they think about legal medicine that you can't drive on, that it's legal to operate machinery and drive as long as you do it with caution.
Well, that's a good question.
And, well, I mean, where do they come up with these? I'll go be a test for them. I'll take those pills and try to drive, and then I'll smoke marijuana and try to drive.
Well, as I said, there has been a study that shows that most people who are on marijuana, that they drive more cautiously, and they're actually a little bit safer than other drivers.
Well, I don't encourage anyone to drive on marijuana, of course.
Of course,
because,
not.
It's against the law.
It's just strange that it's so legal to drive on those other medications that you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't.
I agree with you.
Work.
Well, and that's the thing, of course, you know, if Mr. Washburn, we were talking about earlier, had been prescribed Vicodin or something like that, or OxyContin by his doctor, he could have legally used that at the workplace, even though it probably would have made him far more
impaired. Yeah, I was a laser operator, and, I mean, I ran a YAG 3 laser, and it was perfectly legal for me to go do that with care.
Mm, wow.
But I couldn't have any marijuana in my system.
Boy, I don't think I would want somebody.
Anyway, I feel way better, and let's get on to some other people that have some questions for your guest.
Well, thanks a lot for your call.
Sure, and now that marijuana is obviously medicine, there's, you know, tens of thousands of patients around the country legally using it as medicine. I expect the laws to come into the, you know,
this
current
century,
age.
Yes. Yes, no, the current millennium, yeah, that would be good. So, Don, I asked a lot of questions of Sheriff Justo, and did you want to comment on any of the things that he said or any of the questions?
Well, you know, he and I have agreed to disagree on just about everything.
Well, that's good.
One of the questions on my questionnaire from the people is, what do you want me to do with tasers? And basically, people want tasers to go away. One of my close friends is Dr. Thomas Orvald, who sits on the television show with me, and he is a heart transplant surgeon. So I take him as an expert on what goes on with your heart.
Yeah, I would think he would know.
And he says when you get hit with 50,000 volts of electricity from a taser or anything else, he says, number one, if you have a pacemaker, it's going to kill you.
Yeah.
If you have a heart murmur, it's going to kill you.
And there's no way for an
and
officer
really
to know that.
If you're high on drugs or high on methamphetamine, it's going to kill you. So when the sheriff pulls his trigger on that taser, it's a crapshoot whether or not the person dies or not. That's unacceptable. That's what we used to call a loose cannon.
Well, so would you recommend that officers return to using their other weapons, or how would replace the taser?
You know, that question has been asked to me before, and, you know, I was a cop here on the streets in the city of Portland before we had bulletproof vests, before we had mace, before we had tasers, before we had any of these electronic torture devices or technological improvements, quote unquote. How did we ever get the job done? I just don't know how we did it.
Well,
but
and
you
back
know what
then,
we did?
Did you? Was
we didn't beat people to death either.
Well, was the Portland police's shooting record statistics similar to now, or was it much lower then?
No, I think it was lower. I think there was a lot more crime. There was a lot more homicides in those days, because when I was a homicide detective, I worked homicides number 50 or 52 or 53, and we haven't had that many. But the taser is the one thing that has to go. The other thing that I disagree with is I come out of the police department as a very strict constitutionalist. If the Constitution doesn't work for the hooker on the street, it don't work for you or me, either one.
Well, I think that's
and you
very
know what?
True.
I read the Constitution, and the Patriot Act is not in there. The Patriot Act is not in the Constitution. Any sheriff's officers would be immediately removed from anything about the terrorism people. We're going to get out of that business completely. Mayor Potter did a good thing when he removed them. I will remove them, and I will lobby a sheriff against other law enforcement officers being involved in this violation of our Constitution.
Well, I couldn't disagree with that. Well, we do have a caller. Let's go ahead and talk to the caller now. Caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
It's you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask Bernie Giusto what he feels about the right of the people to petition his office as the highest law enforcement office in the county for redress of grievance, especially when it relates to grievances against police policies that are questionably constitutional that are going on in his county. How would he describe his ideal process for petitioning for redress?
That's a good question. What would you want to say to that, Mr. Giusto?
I'm sorry, I haven't been able to hear either.
Oh, I'm sorry. The caller asked how you would describe what procedure would a citizen use for petitioning your office for a redress of grievances that they feel that your office has committed against their rights.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'd have to know what we're talking about. If we're talking about a complaint against an individual deputy.
No. Can I clarify this a little bit?
One of my supervisors.
I'm not sure that Sheriff Giusto can hear you, caller.
Well, let me try to. Can you hear me if I speak up? Hello?
A little bit.
Okay.
It's a very bad connection.
Well,
sorry,
we have a bad phone.
I'm not talking about a specific problem. I'm talking about where, although, let me be as specific as the Constitution, where there are problems with constitutionally protected rights belonging to the people in your county, and they need access to your office to straighten that out, regardless of where the problem comes from. Is there a process that you would prefer or have that the people can use? Can you describe how the last person that petitioned your office for redress, how did that person come to your attention, and then what did you do to resolve that person's problem?
Well,
the last one, just the most
again,
recent.
I think I understand the question, but it has a number of answers. The first answer is that, again, if it's an issue of individual performance, all the way from courtesy to a violation of the law, we have an internal affairs unit that will take a look at it. If we're talking about just a general concern about how the sheriff's office operates within the county, in terms of, you know, Don's described as constitutional rights or this or that, people are always welcome to call me directly to talk about it, and I talk with any citizen who ever calls me about anything, and nobody will ever tell you I won't return a phone call. I'll talk to people. And beyond that, there's redress for criminal concerns through the district attorney's office, to have them investigate the situation, or if it's a civil issue, through the county attorney's office.
Can I ask if Don DuPay would have a process that would include putting such petitions on the record, making them of record, as opposed to a phone call? How about you, Don?
Would you like to address that?
Yeah, I would. I've said before that the first day I took office that the cameraman would be sitting next to me. I would totally open the sheriff's office to communications. My door will be open. You can come in and talk to me, and everything will be resolved immediately by me.
I think that's the way to go. It should be open. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you.
We can surely. I think only Sheriff Giusto is having a
right, he's on a phone.
Hearing.
I got
yes.
it. I got it. Well, I think that's the way
the
to go in an open
the
government.
The buck stops with the sheriff, and it will stop with me, and I'll solve the problem immediately.
Well, he's the highest law enforcement officer in the county, and perhaps beyond that, constitutionally speaking, and I would applaud your remarks about it being open and recorded. It has to be of record for those who will receive the benefit of the straightening. If there's somebody causing the problem, it has to be of record so those that have caused the problem can get the message. So I appreciate that, and I'll vote for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, love for your call. And do we have other callers? We do. Okay. Well, before we go to our next caller, we're running a little low on time here, so I'll do this real quickly. I want to let you know it's about 10 minutes to 9, but you shouldn't go away at 9 because at 9, you're going to hear APA Compass, and the guest will be Felicia Lowe, a documentary filmmaker who tracked down the history of San Francisco's Chinatown for the video series Neighborhoods, the Hidden Cities of San Francisco. There will also be a panel discussion with activists from the APA community. at 10. The guest is David Smith, co-editor of Inequality Matters, The Growing Economic Divide in America and Its Poisonous Consequences, at 10:30 on Sounds of Awareness. Host Paul Van Dyke will speak with Chris Cook, the first and only blind person who has ever become a naturopathic physician. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, topics include the death of legendary peace activist Damu Smith and the challenging of President Bush by former CIA analyst Ray McGovern. That was pretty choice if you didn't get to hear that. So you don't want to go away. Stick around. In the meantime, let's talk to this caller. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes, drugs and the law. I feel a rant coming on.
Well, make it a quick one.
Oh, I will. Where should I start? Let's see. We don't have a war on drugs in this country. What we have is a war on some drugs.
Yes.
And if you notice that all the drugs that are against the law are the ones that might just suggest that you question authority. Suggest that you look at things a little deeper and maybe look a little more introspectively and things.
You noticed.
Okay, yeah, I have 25,
yes,
30 years.
That.
We'll do that for one. Let's just talk about other drugs. Alcohol. One is I just got off of that train wreck a year and a half ago, and I use marijuana. Now, because marijuana, in which is just, you know, I tried it without marijuana, and I'm depressed, okay? So I could go to psychologists and get a whole bunch of drugs. But I don't really want to do that. So I found one that I like, you see. It happens to be illegal. That means that I got to spend about $150 a week. Okay? So that means I can't spend $150 a week at Wix or buy home remodeling things I like to do, because it's something that I need in order to conduct my business in the way that I do.
Well, I think that there's a lot of people in your position, and I think you also touched on something that we haven't really talked about this morning, which is the outrageously high price that marijuana commands on the black market, and how many, there's so many medical marijuana patients that although they are enabled by the law to grow their own garden, are unable because of they don't have space, or they're in a wheelchair, or they just have a black thumb or whatever. And they end up buying their marijuana, which is their medication, on the black market too, and they can ill afford it. I think it's really a big issue.
And just think of all that black market money.
Yes.
Mr. Mannix,
yes,
is not being taxed.
Yes.
Why we need tax,
we don't
regulate,
have enough,
that's
money,
right,
to keep our schools open, and nobody's going to go to a corporation and say, hey, buddy, pony up.
You know, anybody who was like in a spaceship watching us from outer space would go, let's see, what the heck? One of the most useful plants on the planet.
Yeah.
It does all kinds of things. It's medicine, it's food, mm-hmm, it can make you make all kinds of things out of it. You can run your vehicles on
paper,
it, create energy with it, and yet it's against the law.
Yeah.
I mean, these humans must be insane.
Well, the thing is that one thing is that we should straighten out is that marijuana is not a drug because it has not been refined. It is an herb.
It's an herb. You're absolutely
okay,
correct.
Then when, and sugar, by the way, people, is a drug,
yep,
because it is refined to the point where it is poisonous to you. Take it judiciously if you must, all right?
Yes, you can die of an overdose of it.
Let's start looking at drugs, all of the drugs, okay, all of them, all the ones that the men in the white coat say are perfectly fine for you, okay,
and they all have side effects, and certainly marijuana does too. It's not for everybody, but it's for many people,
and I don't think marijuana is for everybody, because
no,
obviously then I don't like people telling me it's not for me, so why should I try to insist that it is for someone else?
Exactly.
All I'm saying is I don't, you know, I let you, I joke about my sister. It's like she doesn't need pot because she's like just, she just loses and stuff all the time normally, you know, so she's, some people are just naturally that way, you know, I mean.
And some people have a bad reaction to it, and it's just,
exactly,
not, I guess it's not for everyone.
And that could come from, like, self-judgment and stuff, too, and shame and guilt and stuff, so.
Well, you know, you've made some excellent points, but I'm going to have to let you go because we're,
yeah,
so short on time. I want to try and squeeze one more,
all right,
person,
so
in.
People rise up, and, like, we've waited 30 years, and obviously the people in the suits are not going to make it legal for us, so it's like it's about time we start doing it ourselves.
So true. I hope
right
we see
on
you at the march tomorrow at noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square.
Okay, well, I just think just open up your minds and march in your mind, and it'll reflect in the outer world.
Well, the outer world needs a little help, too.
Maybe they
right,
do. I don't know
lot
what they see and all that, but that's fine.
See you
have
soon.
Have a fun march.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yes, and Sheriff Gusto, are you still there?
I am.
Yes, I'd like to invite you to the Million Marijuana March tomorrow so that you can see how well-behaved and how many of us there are. That's at 11 a.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square. And come out and support personal freedom.
You could say a few words to the assembled folks.
Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be having a rally. Don will be there speaking to all of our contingency. And if you could come out, that would be excellent. The highest elected official, you know, a law enforcement, I think that would speak volumes for you.
I'd like to ask the sheriff a quick question, too. Knowing that pharmaceutical drugs, alcohol, and tobacco are far more dangerous than marijuana, do you guys ever feel stupid arresting people for marijuana or just dumb knowing that it's not a harmful substance compared with the other drugs that are legal?
Well, I'm not sure we can make a comparative statement about which drugs are worse or which drugs are better for you, because as everybody has just acknowledged, drugs have different effects on different people. But regardless of marijuana or cocaine or meth or whatever else, that alcohol continues to be the number one plague in the society.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
That's very true. And you know, alcohol causes a lot of damage to people who don't consume it as well as the people who do.
And it's not a matter of whether we feel stupid or not. Remember, you're now what you're doing is challenging the other constitutional side of the issue, and that is law enforcement's responsibility to enforce the laws, which they take an oath to do.
It's true.
Not to ignore, but to enforce. And that's why if the initiative passes, that you will find this sheriff to be a very strong advocate for following the initiative's intent, the law's intent, and the priority for marijuana enforcement. And that will mean the priority for housing people involved with marijuana at whatever level is described in the law will be followed to the letter of law as far as I'm concerned. I'm not here to second-guess law, but at this point, that's not where we are. And so individual law enforcement officers have to use discretion. If your question is, should there be a higher priority placed on things, other things, at this point, my answer to that is probably yes. But now ask the second question. If it involves youth and juveniles, then we got a different question.
I think that's very.
I think we're all in agreement.
We all agree on that. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well,
what about the march? I didn't get an answer.
Oh. Thank you for the invitation. I'm at Portland State tomorrow at a press bar thing at 10 o'clock. It starts at 10 o'clock. If I can slip out of there, I will. I appreciate the invitation. I am not afraid to speak to a crowd like that, believe me.
We'll
be back
speaking about 1:30,
yeah, about
so if you can make it, we would sure appreciate it.
Be fabulous. Well, let's see if we can squeeze in a super quick call. We have just a few minutes left, so caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, this question is for both candidates. The Joint Terrorism Task Force, will the sheriff agree after the election, if he's reelected, to have open public hearings within the county, giving people the opportunity to comment on whether they want a continuing presence of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office as a part of the Joint Terrorism Task Force? And also, to Mr. Dupay, how does he feel about the Joint Terrorism Task Force?
Thanks for your call. Sheriff, you want to answer that first?
Yeah, let me say that if that were the case, if that's what citizens really thought we needed, that's, of course, I'd be happy to have a hearing, a public hearing about it. But let me tell you that the Joint Terrorism Task Force is the way...
Sorry about that. Okay, there we go. Please continue.
Okay. It's much more than about terrorism in terms of the kind of things that we're talking about here, constitutional rights. My sergeant that's a part of that unit now, was recently assigned a case where anthrax scare at a county building was assigned to him, and he has worked that case back to the Midwest. I want to be clear that it is not as simple as Don makes it sound in making these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But I got to tell you that I'm at 80-20%. The comments that I get, 80% favor the sheriff being there, the 20 that don't want us to be there. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably there to stay regardless. But I'm happy to have a hearing. I've sat down with Cop Watch to talk about it openly. I'm not afraid to talk about it openly,
okay,
but I can demonstrate a real clear...
thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. I want to thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you.
And I hope we do get to see you tomorrow at the Million Marijuana March. Don, do you want to respond to that man's question very quickly? We have 30
seconds. I won't need a hearing. I'll just withdraw that sergeant and put him somewhere else. Maybe investigating child care crimes against children. I don't want anybody involved in anything that's not strictly constitutional.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. Sheriff Justo, Don Dupay, Chris Iverson, and Madeline Martinez. Tomorrow, high noon, Pioneer Courthouse Square is the Million Marijuana March. And... it's time to get out there and be positively revolting, everybody, and I will see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.